This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Our understanding of the Democratic Republic of Congo comes largely through media coverage of the civil violence there, and that means there's a lot we don't know about the DRC. Cherie Rivers Ndaliko is a professor of music at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and the co-director of Yole Africa Cultural Center in Goma. And she's giving a talk tonight at North Carolina State University on music and social change in Congo. But first, she joins us on the State of Things. Cherie, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
First of all, tell us a little bit about what's going on in Congo right now.
So Congo is currently the site of the deadliest conflict since the Second World War. And to cite just the most troubling statistics, it is estimated that between 5 and 6 million people have been killed, that millions more have been displaced and are living in refugee camps where many epidemics of disease break out, including recently an epidemic of cholera. One of the primary characteristics of this conflict is extensive sexual violence as a weapon of war, which is a way of displacing the women who otherwise hold the communities together. And another of the sort of staggering characteristics is the forced conscription of child soldiers who then feed into various rebel armies. And generally, the war is represented as an ethnic problem between warring factions of Congo and Rwanda populations. And in fact, many of us who study this conflict interpret it as an economic crisis that's motivated by the desire for the mineral resources that are in the land that are also in our portable electronic devices.
And so that gives us a great deal of responsibility here in the West to do more than just consume the most dramatic parts of the story you just told.
It absolutely does. It also has a lot to do with which sides of the story we do and don't get to hear.
So obviously we know which sides we're hearing, and again, it has to do with the most dramatic. Tell us about then art as a tool for resistance and what part that may play in giving us a more nuanced and a more accurate picture.
So people often find it counterintuitive when I say let's understand conflict through music, for example. And I think it makes a lot of sense to look through the lens of music if we think about why human beings make music in the first place. So obviously, in addition to leisure activities and entertainment, people make music to be able to connect with one another, to be able to tell their own stories, to be able to create a record of existence and experience, and to assert agency in the world. And all of those are really important activities in local and individual transformation, especially in a conflict region. So when the stakes are higher, then the stakes of self-representation are also higher. And the power to tell one's own story in a circumstance like that that's taking place in the east of Congo oftentimes is the most powerful position that people have. And through art and through film, through music, through song, through theater, through dance, people are often able to tell stories that otherwise do not get integrated into this global narrative of urgency and crisis and need. And as a result, their voices aren't taken into consideration when the world or the imagined international community tries to make some sort of intervention. So the idea of art and culture playing a central role in social change is that in order for the changes that the local populations really want to take place, there has to be a way that they can express what those changes are, what the needs are, and what the local solutions to those needs are.
From where I sit in this chair, so far away from the conflict, and where, again, the dramatic part is the easiest thing for me to interpret, how do I do that? It sounds complicated. It sounds subjective. There are thousands, if not millions, of individual stories that would add up to a much clearer picture, and I don't have that kind of time.
Well, that's an excellent question and one that I've been asked before. Obviously, the ideal scenario would be for you to come to Congo and meet some of these people and hear their stories, hear their voices. The work that I've been fortunate enough to do for a number of years now is with the Yole Africa Cultural Center. It's an organization that was founded in 2000 in Goma, which is the capital of one of the most conflicted regions. And Yole Africa's mission is to empower young people through culture, through art, through creativity, with the idea that by teaching critical thinking skills, by teaching people the skills with which to express themselves nonviolently and to envision a different a different world and their part in a different world, through those kinds of skills, social change can actually start to happen. And so in terms of how people can get involved, Yole Africa puts out a lot of material, has a lot of online series that offer different perspectives, that offer local perspectives, that show daily life going on in places that we don't get to see on a regular basis. So just witnessing those stories is one step that starts to generally to lead people to asking different questions about their own involvement. And, you know, sometimes the way to get involved is to think about consumer practices here, because that's something that you can do. It's not, you don't have to be in the Democratic Republic of the Congo to think about the ways that American consumer practices are fueling this conflict.
Name some of those practices.
So all of the portable electronic devices that we use, laptops, cell phones, digital cameras, automobiles, airplanes, all of these things have certain minerals in them. Cassiterite and coltan are the most, and cobalt, that come primarily from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and they are mined illicitly, which is part of what is forcing people off of the mineral-rich land.
So we need to think about those. And again, that's a troublesome bit of meditation that you're putting us through. Now let's think about it from the other side, because you described that too. What it means for people in conflict in those regions to be able to imagine themselves in a different situation. First of all, imagine themselves as having agency, and then that agency transforming the situation they're in. So what Yole Africa and other organizations do is promote that kind of creative activity and artistic activity among the people who are most seriously involved, right?
Right. Absolutely. That's true. And I should say that Yole Africa now has other organizations that we work with. Originally, it was the only cultural center, and it was opened at a time when schools and everything else were shut down. And so even having a cultural center itself was a profoundly radical act. The idea of creating a space where young people could come together and envision something other than joining or being killed by a rebel militia group was already, just the space was already a really radical act. But I think to get at your other question, a story is probably the best way to do it. So in 2006, as part of the Twaumba Amani, which means we want peace, we stand for peace, that was an album and a music video that Yole Africa put together, and it brought together all of the most famous musicians from the region. It was the first time they had done something collaboratively. And in shooting the video and recording the final version of the song, they went to a part of the region where many former child soldiers who had managed to escape from rebel armies were living, but they hadn't been able to really reintegrate into society because of the trauma that they had experienced. And so these musicians went, and the idea was that you know, in recording this, they would also be performing for these young people, which they did. And their music being catchy and wonderful as it is, the young people, of course, started to learn the songs and sing along and dance. And they started encroaching more and more on where the camera was to shoot this video. And finally, the director said, you know, just come into the video. And so they actually got to be part of the video, and they were singing in the chorus of this. And so in line with Yole Africa's tradition of always premiering any work in the place that it was created, the final version of the video was taken back to that group of young people and projected there. And the response from a lot of these young people who have undergone horrific trauma was to articulate that this was the first time that they had been able to see themselves in any position other than the images they had of themselves with machine guns and machetes and imposing violence on people. And that they realized that every night when they go to sleep, when they tried to imagine themselves, that was the only imagination that they had. And by virtue of seeing themselves singing, seeing their bodies dancing, hearing their own voices, they realized for the first time that there was another way that they could interact with the world, and that there was another way that other people could see them, and that the power that they had previously had by, you know, proximity to weapons could be reconfigured, and that people would engage with them as important people because they were in a music video, because they were singing with, you know, important musicians. And just that simple shift of being able to imagine oneself differently often leads to engaging practically in the world in a really different way.
Well, let's talk about that, from personal psychological change, a powerful one, to social change. I think there's a good story about collaborating with aid organizations to confront cholera.
Right. There is, in fact. And this is the opposite of what I call productive social change. But it is a very, very popular approach to social change in conflict regions. It's become increasingly popular for humanitarian organizations. And people are surprised to hear that medical and emergency relief organizations are dedicating significant time and funds to investing in producing songs and music albums and films in conflict regions. But they are doing that with the idea that that's the best way to sensitize local populations. That is true, but oftentimes the politics of these productions are very conflicted. And so one recent example, we were approached to partner with a disaster relief and medical organization that wanted to raise awareness to the outbreak of cholera, which is a very urgent issue. And the idea was to do that through a song. But the stated idea from the NGO was that we would be able to let local voices talk about local issues in a locally relevant way. So the idea of partnering with Yole was because Yole is known as a sort of radical artistic organization that supports young people in thinking critically, like I said. And so Yole organized a series of conversations about cholera and whatnot. And the promise for the winning group was a significant cash prize and radio play and a professional recording and a regional tour. So a good gig. And the finalists, who are to be judged by a mutually agreed upon jury of artists, performed their songs, and they were all saying, if you actually want cholera to stop, then we have to call on Western governments and Western individuals to stop supporting and buying the products that are supporting the rebel militias that are forcing people off their land into internally displaced persons' camps where cholera spreads. If you actually want cholera to stop, that's the way to do it. And of course, that's not a message that's popular among Western-funded organizations. And so the solution was to cancel the competition at the last minute and find another group that's actually not even a musical group to record a song about the five important stages of washing hands. Mm. This song is now being played all over the east of Congo and being marketed as, you know, the authentic voice of local populations about critical issues.
Oh, so the interesting thing is, it is important to wash your hands, one element in. But the fact is that not allowing the voice to come from the ground up misses a much larger point and fails to activate all the other good things that you said about noticing that you're in charge, right, that you have power to change. Because otherwise, all the power is coming from the barrel of a gun, and that's the only thing that's been working so far.
Right.
Yeah. And are you dangerous? When you said you opened a cultural center, and if you carry this message and if you really do empower people to find a new way out, it seems to me you'd be very dangerous to all sides who carry weapons in that. I mean, are you threatened?
So what's interesting is that culture is not perceived as dangerous, right? And so working through music and working through film has allowed tremendous leeway that would not be possible if we were petitioning through political channels or through legal channels. And so it took quite a few years for governmental bodies to even catch on to the power the organization had established. And by that point, it was really too late because there's sort of a critical mass. We have over 24,000 youth every year who come through the center. And, you know, the center's been in existence since 2000. So that's a lot of people. Many of whom do not go on to be artists, many of whom are now influential judges and lawyers and politicians and business people. And so it took a while for the powers that be, the authority figures, to realize that there was a potential threat, and their solution has been to try at every turn to partner with Yole Africa because it remains one of the only organizations in that region that can gather a large enough crowd, and it's the only organization that's been able to gather a large crowd peacefully, repeatedly.
Tell us about the project Art on the Front Lines.
I would love to. That grew directly out of the cholera competition that I just talked about, and this was a way for Yole Africa to try and create a platform where the local voices could speak uncensored. It is an online web series. Every second Thursday, we launch a new episode. There are short documentary pieces profiling daily life, profiling some of the ordinary and extraordinary people who live in Goma. There are also music videos. There are also songs. All of these things are shot and recorded and edited by the young people who've trained at Yole Africa. And the idea was to create a platform where those stories could be told and didn't have to go through an NGO, that they could be told, you know, through a cultural center that wants to share the kind of strength and dignity and power and humanity that's at the core of the community there. And these are people whose lives are so often reduced to statistics when we're talking about, you know, Eastern Congo or the Congo conflict. So art on the front line is actually that. It's art pieces that are made on the front line of a conflict. And many of them are very outspoken politically. In fact, the first number of episodes that we launched were the finalists for the cholera competition. And since then, young people have been pitching additional episodes and creating those, and there's a lot of enthusiasm. And it's really, it's a practice of empowerment for the youth there, but it's also their opportunity to educate the rest of the world. It's really aimed as much at a Western audience as it is at a local audience, which is a new thing. A lot of Yole's previous activities have been really designed for the local community, and this is a way of reaching out and saying, you know, no, I have a right to tell my story also, and here it is in my own words, and these are the images I want to put with it, and this is how I want to be celebrated, and this is how I want my critique to be registered on the record.
Well, each of those individual stories have their own value and deserve to be celebrated in their own right, but they all together tell a larger story about who really is involved in this conflict. Because again, going back to media portrayals, it's easy enough for us to watch TV and give up and say, oh, that place has been in conflict. Those folks just don't know how to do anything but fight. Well, and that's all they want. I mean, I think that's the other part of the despair that we see, that we feel. So hearing that people really have another way of looking at their lives and want another expression for themselves is a part of the larger story that you tell. And also there's a kind of self-sufficiency movement that's going on in the Congo. I'd like you to tell us about that, because that, it seems to me, is another outcome of this kind of activity.
Absolutely. One of the most disempowering things is to be given help when you don't want it, or to be given a kind of help that you don't want. And so a direct result of critical thinking skills is the ability to recognize what it is that you need and to find solutions. And, you know, so again, out of these creative practices, young people are starting to realize that relying on foreigners, relying on outside organizations doesn't actually result in the kinds of changes that they want to experience. And so instead of doing that, they're really trying to become creative. There's one example in the Art on the Frontline series of a young man who comes home from school and he rents out his bicycle for between 25 and 75 cents, depending on how many meters people are going to ride. And it's such a small thing, but through his ingenuity and entrepreneurship, he's able to pay his school fees, he's able to buy his textbooks, he's able to buy his uniforms and his clothing and his shoes and everything else like that. And so it's a small example, but the kind of initiative that he demonstrates is not in any way unique, and it's starting to gain more and more momentum, as people realize that even if it's a small monetary value, the fact of being able to do it oneself is really, really powerful. And then collectively, cumulatively, that moves it, turns into a larger movement.
Yole Africa, obviously busy in DRC, but also elsewhere in Africa, right?
Yole Africa, also busy in other places where there's conflict, most notably in Uganda. Yole has been active very, very active for quite some time. And more recently, also in the United States. That's been our newest territory.
And the beat makers from right here in Chapel Hill, Applejuice Kid and Pierce Freelon, took their beat making lab to Congo as well.
Absolutely. We were very pleased to be the hosts for their first sort of experience of trying to figure out how to do a beat making lab in a conflict region. It was a wonderful experience. And some of the young people who participated in that exchange are also making some of the beats that you hear in the Art on the Frontline series. So in some ways, that collaboration lives on.
Great project. Cherie, yeah. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Thank you for having me.
Cherie Rivers Ndiliko is a professor of music at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, co-director of Yole Africa Cultural Center in Goma. She's going to give a talk tonight, North Carolina State, on music and social change in Congo. It's at 7 o'clock, Thompson Hall. If you didn't get that, go to our website. It's there, stateofthings.org. Coming up next, we're going to get a preview of Mardi Gras, Children of the Horn. But first, we're going to hear a sample of some of what's coming out of Africa on the Frontline Project with the group Uhaki and the song Justice.
Jesus. wote mnaonisikia, wananchi ni haki cho tunalia, haki na bidi kila mwananchi viongozi msikie kilio cha sauti. Rais na mabalozi, gavana na wanabunge, haki na bidi kila mwananchi viongozi msikie kilio cha sauti.